Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, former France hooker Benjamin Kayser and ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. We're on Rugby Pass this season, as well as all your usual podcast platforms, and we've got the home of the Top 14 Premier Sports on board with us too. As well as being the only place to watch live Top 14 in the UK and Ireland from each and every round, Premier Sports is also the place to watch every single minute from each game of the new United Rugby Championship. So watch the biggest names with all the games live on Premier Sports this season. Just check out premiersports.com to subscribe today from just $12.99 a month on Sky, Virgin and the Premier Player. We'll have a look at Fabien Galthié's France squad for the Autumn International shortly and chat about all of the Top 14 action, as well as getting a special guest on as well. But first, how are you two doing?
I'm good.
Wait, say it like you mean it, mate. Come on.
No, I'm good. Just a bit tired, but good, happy, excited about November tests that are just gonna come around the corner. I can't wait for that third one. I'm sure we will speak about it left, right, and center. But that third test against the All Blacks is just gonna be, you know, something else. And I'm already excited about it. And somebody mentioned, you know, those two games, that one, and then obviously the opener of the World Cup in 2023 against them. I think it's the 8th of September. It's probably the only date that I remember already so far ahead. So, exciting times. I'm not going to lie to you, a little bit of crush down after my fake graduation at Oxford, which was fake because I haven't done the assignments. And then the reality of actually having to do those assignments and the amount of work that is still left. So I celebrated way too early. I still have a shit ton of assignments to finish, and two of them are due Monday. So it's proper.
Did you have like a mad Monday, like post-university, let's go mental down the student union with all the young kids, or how does it work? Like, did you get to celebrate with your classmates, or is that the last hurrah really for once you've done all the assignments?
No. Proper celebrations all week, pub crawls, and it was Freshers Week in Oxford. So it was a very, very busy week. But no mad Monday, no super Saturday, but in typical Oxford manner, there was a Friday night proper party, and on Saturday we still had class. So it's like, you know, get excited. We'll still take you back. But, you know, the Russians deliver that as they normally do. They stayed up the latest and they still faced up to the reality of class the next day.
Johnny, any Freshers Week in the south of France or not?
No, I'm not sure what the opposite of Freshers Week is, but that's my current experience. I actually had a weekend off rugby as well because my family was meant to be coming over from Scotland for the first time in 2.5 years. So didn't work on any games, which is really nice. Went up to Bordeaux to pick up mum and dad on Saturday, only for dad to realize that as he hadn't traveled in 2 years, he hadn't renewed his passport. So a message to everyone that's looking to now go on holiday, the world is open, but to travel, you need a passport. So my dad is currently sitting back in Scotland whilst my mum is having a field day with the kids in the swimming pool and picking them up from school and seeing them for the first time in a long time. So lesson learned. Get your passport renewed. The world is now open and you can get out on holiday, but not for John Senior, not this week. So I'm not sure if that is the opposite of Freshers Week, but it can't be far off. But that is currently what's going on out here in the south of France.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, we mentioned Fabien Galthié having named his 42-man France squad for the autumn international. So let's have a look at it then. No announcement on who's filling in for Charles Olivon as captain yet, but it's expected to be Gael Ficou, I think. And Raphael Ibanez has confirmed that it will be one of Ficou, Jalon, Marchand, Aldrit or Dupont. So who are you going for?
One of five.
I think Anthony Jalon is ahead of Gael Ficou, to be honest, because he did it in Australia and he did really well. And they won for the first time since, I can't remember what, 1991, I think it was, or something like that. Gael Ficou, whether he's captain or not, will always be that vice captain of the backs, you know, and he's that defensive captain that Sean Edwards put in place. But it's sensational that there's actually so many. So we mentioned so many times of how many French guys could actually considered in the World 15 at the moment. And, you know, Cyril Bailly and Julien Marchand and potentially Bernard Leroux, Greg Aldrit, obviously the 9 and the 10. I'm fed up of saying their name all the time and all those guys in Vakatawa. But it's sensational to know that actually Julien Marchand is captain of Toulouse and they only did the double last season and won the top 14 the year before. So he's always, and he's very, very young. Anthony Jalon, I didn't know that trait of him. I knew that he would chop, you know, break people's bones for a living, but I didn't know he was also a good leader and he did sensationally well in Australia. Gael Ficou, we always knew he had that in him, but I don't know if you guys read the press and racing. He's really trying to press to say it's my time to do more than just play. It's my time to take on that role. So he wasn't speaking about the French team. He was more speaking about his attitude for racing, that he's got to bring people with him and all that. And Greg Aldrit, I think you mentioned, has a serious sort of international pedigree now that allows him the reality of doing that. And he's a hard grafting guy. I don't know how he is as an individual, but I'm sure he would do well. So it's a great sign to have the choice, right? It's a great sign to do it, because when I was there, there was Thierry Dussautoir, and after that was a desert. And it was, who the hell can captain this team? And that's a problem, because a captain on his own can't do anything. So basically, whoever's picked is great, because he will be backed by 4 or 6 or 7 other guys who could almost do the job.
100%. Like the one guy freakishly that stands out to me is Antoine Dupont. It's like the only guy you can say is nailed on starting. But then you look at the back row, Jalon, and the words that Galtier came out with this week, he said he was absolutely heroic, incredible as a captain and a game changer. But you look at who they've named in the back row, and you could pick anyone. They've picked 7 blokes, but you could make up a back row of any combination of the 7 of them. They're that talented. And it goes back to that point, Benji, like this is the first time ever I can really remember this strength and depth with this French side. And yeah, the captain could be any one of 5, 6, 7 blokes, not just the 5 that you listed, but there's a serious amount of depth and it's exciting. And like you said, you talked about the desert and there was maybe an oasis named Kayser that should have been named captain, but didn't quite get it. But look, now you could have any one of 7, 8 blokes. They've all been outstanding. And the fact that they function as a team, it makes the job easier. Like it's not like Titi Dussautoir, who, you know, had to deal with poor coaches, poor management and rally the troops every second weekend. You're now high flying, playing good rugby and they're a confident group of people. So the captaincy becomes an easier job. So look, there could be 5, 6, 7 blokes that take it on. My vote as well would be Jalon. Antoine Dupont is the other one, is a bit of a wild card, but he's the best player for me in the world right now. Could easily be captain and take that on as well with the responsibilities he has week in, week out at Toulouse. But it's exciting times. But I think the words that Galtier came out with during this week would give a nod in the direction of Jalon.
And talking of strength and depth, Benji, none more so than hooker. No Camus Shah. No Pierre Bourgeoisie.
So I'll out of complete transparency and honesty, I'm discovering this list right now. I had big sort of hints of who was going to be there, but I just realized that Camichat is not there because Gaëtan Barlow, who did really well in Australia, was really a good surprise, and he just nailed it. So it's also, I think, in terms of and Pierre Tomovaca coming back, but it's a bit the consistency of the coaches to be like, I think that's one thing you can praise of them when you've done well. They will go. Remember how we spoke about that gap in that summer gap between the Six Nations 2020 who weren't finished, or 21 that they finished later, and they stuck to the same team. Remember, and you know, in a couple of months you don't know what can happen. Well, they keep on doing the same thing because Camichat has been playing well, and maybe others have been playing well. But if you do well when you have the blue jersey on, then you will stick it. And I remember, I don't know if he stole that from the All Blacks, but it was one thing that went in Clermont where we had some All Blacks coaches that came to coach us. They always said, no, you win or lose points when you've got the jersey on you. And because I think we were asking them, how come Jerome Kano can go to Japan for 2 years and then come back and whoever's good? He said, no, you win or you lose points when you have the jersey on. So if you do incredibly well, but then life strikes you with an injury, however well the other guy does, and you hope that he does really, really well, you're not going to lose everything. You will win or you will lose your spot on the pitch. And I think it's pretty ballsy of them.
It's interesting as well. Galtier said in the press that he mentioned the point of the hookers when he was asked, and he said, look, there's been 18 games and we've lost five. And every single one of the five that we've lost has been in the last 10 to 15 minutes. We've actually been leading all of these games and lost. And it's been because of the quality of our bench. And he made the point that set piece is actually one of the biggest points they need to strengthen on and throw quality. So that's obviously why, clearly for him, it's been a shot in that direction. We need to finish out games. He mentioned the sort of finisher term that everyone talks about, completing games and closing them out. They've led so many games but lost because of throw accuracy and quality in the last 10 minutes. And that's why I think these guys have just missed out.
And any other notable omissions from the squad? I mean, no Anthony Boutier, Carbonell, Tolofua.
I think Carbonell is a victim of how Toulon have been playing. I mean, they've not been going well as a team, and it's obviously hard to shine as a part of that team as an individual when things aren't going right. Tolofua, if you look through that back row, like Makalu, I'm delighted to see him back, but Tolofua essentially is the only specialist number eight. Like Makalu can play seven and six, as can every other single bloke in that back row unit. So it looks almost like Tolofua has lost out because he's a straight up number eight, whereas other people can cover, you know, seven, they can jump and line out, they can be snaffling ball.
If you consider Aldridge a starter and there's no discussion, that's what you mean.
Exactly. Yeah. He's the only real specialist, but the other guys can do it all. And that's possibly why he's lost out.
Speaking of Makalu, in the press conference to announce the squad, Fabien Galtier referenced his ability to cover wing as well as back row, presumably as part of a 6-2 bench split. But the guy can do everything.
Mate, he's a freak show. And I don't know if you watched him play against Clermont 2 weeks ago, but just like the way he played, like he's so athletic. Like he ran the game, he ran the line out, like absolutely dominated Clermont's line out by himself. And then essentially in multi-phase, he sits out on a 50-meter line and runs like a winger. So I'm not surprised Fabien would say that. Athletically, he is head and shoulders above the rest. He is a freak show. So look, I'm excited to see him back. I don't know if he'll actually be playing on the wing. I don't think that'll happen. But look, he's a great guy to have and cover center, wing, fullback, because he can run like all of them. He's an absolute talented kid. Great to see him back.
And another one who's in, friend of the show, Thibaut Flamand. He told us he wanted to play for France and he's in.
Fair play. Because there's a lot of competition. There's obviously the Seva Maina who stepped down from the French team. So could that play a role? I don't know. But he offers something different. You mentioned Makalu. Obviously, Fabien, I think what he likes other than his line-out ability is his speed. International rugby is just about speed and execution. And Thibaut Flamand has got a hell of a lot of speed and he's a proper athlete for a second row. So yes, he's no Joe Tikori and he never will be. He's no Romain Thao and he never will be. But in the moments where you just need grafters, you know, when Bernard Leroux went from number six or number seven, even to play number four and just be that workhorse machine that you've got there, when they asked Paul Willemse to drop 15 kg or whatever it is, 10 kgs to be able to run more. Well, Thibaut Flamand has got that ability to work for days. I don't think Alwyn Jones is the biggest lad. I don't think Brody Retallick is the biggest lad. But wow, do they play and how much pace for the size they've got is just incredible. And he fits that description perfectly. So, you know, you guys are made for international rugby. There's some of them. I think Thibaut is one of them.
Also, like you said, he offers something different. Like he's a line-out, like he's a loose headlock. And I think France develops loads of tight headlocks, like massive units like Leroux, like Tau. like Valencia, they've got three sort of in abundance. But the other side is the loose head side, that line out sort of rangy option that we're maybe used to seeing more in Southern Hemisphere or in British rugby, because we don't develop as big a units as you guys seem to do in France. But he certainly fits that mold and he's something different. But again, just knowing Thibaut and knowing the story is very, very cool. Like knowing how far he's come and to be a double winner and like that success succession and how far he's come from his university days to Argentina, it's ridiculous. So it's really cool to see him in the squad, and here's hoping he gets capped.
And in the backs, Mathieu Jalibert scored 25 points for Bordeaux at the weekend. Is he ahead of Romain Ntamack? I mean, there has been talk of them starting together, but I don't think that is likely, is it? With Fiku and Vakatawa in there?
And Danti, when he's on form, mate, is a proper cannon. I don't know. I think it's a tough one, but that's choix de riche, a rich man's choice, and it's fantastic. I still think Ntamack is just slightly ahead in their mind. But Jalibert, we've praised him enough, you know, to know that he can deliver anything. But how comfortable is it to be able to have both? You know, one normally will sit on the bench and one will start. And in case, touch wood, there's always a couple of games before the November test will actually start, right? There's only Argentina to after the opener, and then you go to the third test. That team could be particularly different. So it's such a comfort with Carbonell on top of that not being even involved. It's such a comfort to have quality operators like that. And I'll just add Tani Vili, the big Brive, sort of arrived from Brive Academy, New Caledonian origin, who played in Clermont, who's an absolute unit of an athlete. He really is. I think he must weigh at least 110 kgs. He's like the French Manu Tuilagi, if you want to. But he's taken some time to actually develop. He was taken on tour in Australia a bit out of nowhere, to be honest. It was a proper surprise. He's been playing really well, partnering up with Damien Penaud quite a lot in the center and stuff. And he's picked again. So it's a fantastic reward for such a prominent talent.
Should we quickly have a go then? Argentina, November 6th. Name me the starting 15.
Bai Marchand will definitely start.
Oukpatin?
Demba Bemba is playing really well, but Oukpatin played well in Australia. He was a bit satisfaction. I still say they'll go for Demba Bemba because he's been there for longer. He's been injured so many times and he's playing well for Lyon. Then I will go for Leroux Williams. I'll go for Leroux Tao, actually. Leroux Tao. It'll be really interesting to see how they... Oh, that's impossible. I don't even want to pick that. But I'll just say Leroux Tao for the sake of it. Aldrit at 8, Jelonche at 6. And funnily enough, I will go with Crotin, the Lyon guy, just for the line-out ability. Makalou on the bench. And he played really well at the weekend against Toulouse. Lyon beat Toulouse for the first loss of the season. He played really well. It doesn't look like much, but wow, he does a lot of work and he was very good. Then obviously Dupont and Ntamack with Jalibert on the bench. Fiku Vatakatawa in the center. Penaud on one wing, that's for sure. On the wing, do you go for the form guy, Lebel, or do you try Tao Fifina, or do you stick to Gabin Villiers, who really delivered? I think they'll go for Villiers. And fullback, I reckon they will stick with Melvin Jaminet.
Yeah, I had Cyril Bai, Marchand, Oukpatin, Bernard Leroux. I had Tao as well, Saint Benji. I went for Aldrit, Jelonche, and Francois Croix, not Crétin. But again, two guys that are kind of freakish and exceptional. Could be either. One's going to lose out, and I would go Makalou on the bench. I went for Dupont-Jalibert. I think that Dupont is the best player in the world. And Jalibert is like the equivalent of Dupont, but a 10. Again, what he did at the weekend, Mathieu Jalibert, absolutely freakish. Traditionally, you would, I think, keep Dupont and Ntamack together because they're so used to being each other at club. But I just think Jalibert has that X factor, that extra gear that is just exceptional to watch. And therefore, he deserves to start. I went Fiku Vakatawa in centers, Gabin Villiers and Penaud on the wings. But I think that Villiers possibly is going to be, I think he is injured and I'm not sure he's going to make it. And I also had Jaminet from Perpignan at fullback because he was awesome in summer as well. So pretty similar. I think only one change. We could coach. We could do this.
There you go. Fabien, we've done your job for you. Easy. Look forward to seeing that in a few weeks' time. Let's turn our attentions to the top 14 now then and get our guest on, because we thought we'd have a chat about one of the new boys to the league this season. And we've had Beerit skipper Steph Armitage on a couple of times before. So I think we have to make him sign a permanent contract or give him a match ball or something like the Easter on Soccer AM if we have him on again. So we've got a better guest on now to discuss everything going on down in the Basque Country at the moment. Former All Black and current Beerit centre, Francis Saili joins us. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, man. How are you guys?
Good, mate. We're good. First thing I want to ask you, mate, is how was the Foire au Jambon? Because you are one of our men on the ground in the Pays Basque, tell Benji what he's missing, and to all our French listeners that love a bit of French culture, explain the Foire au Jambon in Bayonne and how much you enjoyed it on Saturday.
It was actually good fun. We're in a meetup with our family. One of the players that used to play here, Willie Duplessis, he's playing up in Mont-de-Marsan. And funny thing about it is that me and my wife actually didn't have breakfast. So we were saying we're going to save ourselves when we get to the festival. We're just pretty much going to have a feast there. But then he said his neighbor had a bar that he owned literally not far from.
Of course he did.
On the tent, and he goes, "You keen for one?" And I go, "Yeah, sure, bro." And I was like, "Mate, I haven't eaten yet." He goes, "Yeah, no, when we get there." So we got there and then met with his neighbor, and then we had our first couple pints. And then after my first one, it was unusual for me, but I felt tipsy, and then I was like standing there, and I went outside and I was just like, "Bro," I was like, "Mate, where are those baguettes at?" And he's like, "It's underneath the pram." And so I was like scoffing for like the bloody baguettes. I was grabbing off my daughter. Yeah, over the baby. I was like grabbing off my daughter. And then like my wife was like saying, my oldest one was like walking off doing like walkabouts. So I was trying to like chase after her.
Even if you're trying to depict sort of a strange afternoon, I'm still jealous, mate. I still have sort of the smell of all that beautiful stuff that you got into, the traditions and the history part of that place. That's the reason why I love it so much. And even when you speak about it, you look happy.
Yes.
So that's exactly what I want to hear. That's exactly what I want to see.
It's a really cool like family time, as is like the Fête de Bayonne, which I think is like the fourth or fifth. I'm not sure if you've done it yet, but it's like the fourth or fifth largest gathering of people. Like, so you've got like Oktoberfest, you've got Pamplona, the Running of the Bulls, and the Fête de Bayonne. It's absolutely mental, but it's like family weekend, like beers outside, nice food, sun shining, people having a good time. It's just awesome. And it's so good as well. Like after COVID, where we haven't done anything for 2 years, I took my family down on Sunday. Like food was amazing. Wine was next level. Just so good to be back out in the sunshine, socializing, having fun. It's awesome.
Yeah. And I think because like you said, I think that Fête de Bayonne hadn't been done in the last couple of years. So
yeah, it was canceled.
I think they kind of, from what I heard, like everybody was saying that they're kind of using this weekend and this festival as a way to kind of, you know, bring back that sort of vibe again, given what's happened in the last couple of years. So it was kind of nice to stay around. I wanted to stay around a little bit longer just because I was having fun in the sun. Wasn't there for too long, but was good luck.
And how are you finding the French culture generally? Because you've done Munster, you've been London with Quinns, obviously back in New Zealand. So you're well placed to talk about the differences between the leagues, differences between the cultures. So France suiting you well?
Yeah, man. I think it's when I got here, when I landed my feet here in Biarritz, I got so many messages from, you know, from mates, teammates, old teammates from back home saying that you landed a good spot. Then obviously when I obviously got here and I was just like, geez, like I'm actually happy. And I think that probably just makes it a whole lot easier for me and my family. Makes it easier for me to go to work. You know, I've got a smile on my face. There may be some rugby politics that may be going on at work or anything like that. But I think when you get that balance when you leave training and then you kind of appreciate what you have outside of it. And I'm at the age now where, you know, I'm heading towards the latter part of my career. But, you know, I just want to enjoy every moment because when I was a bit young, I was just so caught up in, you know, wanting to like, making it rugby be this thing, but like now it's starting to be more of like the moments and, you know, appreciating, you know, time on the field, time off the field. And a place like Biarritz has been amazing for me and my family, and especially coming from, say, for instance, the Premiership, knowing that I was going to come to a Pro D2, I kind of had the mindset, you know, I was like, man, for me, you know, coming from like a top level sort of rugby into, you know, Pro D2, I kind of had to go with the mindset like, you know what, let's just go and then just enjoy it. The only thing I can control is my attitude. So if I can have a good attitude every day, I'm sure I'm going to enjoy my rugby. And then it just showed for me anyway. And my first experience here in France, I'm loving it so far.
How did you find it, mate? It's obviously, like All Black, you played for Munster, Harlequins, like top level rugby. The same for me, not the same drop off, obviously, that you've experienced. But like, you know, obviously Pro D2 is graft. The travel is really hard. The bus trips are brutal. Some of the teams you go and play, it's not attractive rugby. The shit gets beaten out of you. And then actually some of the teams, the standard is actually quite surprising. And some of it's good. And there's some exciting young French kids. So like, how have you found it? Like coming from the career that you've had, landing in Pro D2, not knowing anything about it, I imagine, because it's not screened on TV anywhere else in the world.
No.
How did you find the experience of Pro D2? And then also bouncing, like I know you were nominated for Player of the Year last year in Pro D2. How did you find it in general? But then how also have you found the level bouncing back up to top 14 this year?
I actually, surprisingly enough, man, I actually enjoy playing Pro D2, man. Given that you get 4 weeks on, 1 week off, like weekends.
For the body.
Yeah, for the body though. So, no, like that side of it was actually quite nice. You get a bit of time off. And we never trained in the weekends as well. So if we had a Thursday game, we actually had from Friday till Sunday off. So we didn't rock up until Monday again. So that was actually quite nice. But the rugby side of things, like the level of it, some teams, mate, they surprised me. Like you'd be doing these bus trips, and I think that was the shit thing about it. Trips up to like Grenoble, where it was like 11 hours and you're on the bus and you'd be playing the next day. And that was quite grim. But I guess for us, we had a good camaraderie between us boys. Then you go up to these sort of places, and when you win, it's like a big buzz. So you kind of create that sort of environment amongst all of us that, you know, it is fun. We can actually make a fun, like, time out of having these long bus trips though. So obviously for us to bounce back up to top 14, it's just a massive buzz around this whole place. You guys will probably know as well. 7-8 years last time Beerutz was in top 14. So for me, I was like being up in this sort of level. I've played against the likes of like Clermont and the Champions Cup. And, you know, that's the sort of level you want to play at. And now that we're here, I know we're capable of doing it, and it probably doesn't show at the moment with us at the bottom of the table, but I know that it's unlucky of us with the sum of injuries that we've kind of gained along the way. And obviously that's part of the sport, but I think, you know, it's a good check for us or for a lot of the younger boys, because it's going to be a long season, and, you know, every week is going to be a grind. You know, it's not like in Pro D2 where some games you can kind of hide, whereas like these sort of games, like week in, week out, it's like test match footy.
You mentioned how happy you were and how welcomed you felt by arriving Beerutz and stuff. But mate, let me tell you, like exactly like you said, 7 years until they've been waiting to come back top 14, but forever your family now, you will be sort of embedded in the hearts of this Beerutz region. And they will know that you are the guy before Stefan Armitage, because everybody speaks of Stefan, right? But you're the guy before him who kicked that final penalty shootout. And let me tell you, you looked the most relaxed I've ever seen a guy kick a penalty kick in such a tense moment. I was like, please don't miss it. Please don't miss it. Because you look too cool. You look too cool. You look too relaxed and too good. I was like, not this one.
Imagine the headlines for that to be like this. Like this guy being too cool and relaxed going up for the kick with a smile on his face, and he bloody shanks the kick though. So thankfully you're winning. But no, man, like back to that moment, it was a surreal one, man. Like we literally just played 100 minutes of rugby, and, you know, we came into the circle and, you know, like we were depleted. Like a lot of us were so tired, and you can kind of see it on all our faces. And, you know, good thing about it, like Sean, our coach, and then obviously Steph had like spoken and just said, guys, like we literally just played 100 minutes. Regardless of the result, what's going to happen after this, bloody proud of yous. The effort that you guys have put in was immense. And I think for us, like, because I'm not sure if Steph had told you guys this as well in the podcast, but all year at Captain John, we literally do kicks. So it's me, Steph, Johnny, sometimes Henry, but we always go off the kickers, like Captain John. And then sometimes our trainer would be like, guys, enough, like cut it. Like you guys might pull a hammy or something. And after we had done what we did against Bayonne, doing all those kicks, mate, we can forever live. We can literally do kicks at Captain's Run all we want. We can, there is no time limit to it though. So I think for us, like we literally, like before we were growing up, and I knew I was going to be like in the lineup. And then as soon as I went, I was just like, you know what, man? Like, look, we've really just said it. We've just played 100 minutes. Let's just have a bit of fun with it. Like smile and just relax with it. So like you said, Benji, I went up and then I kind of had that smile on my face. And as soon as I got the kick, to be honest, I was a little bit nervous because I just didn't want to shank it, because I was like, imagine what my brother in the stands will be thinking right now. But obviously I've got to learn. And then you just can't write it. You can't script it with our captain taking the last kick and just how it ended. We're forever grateful for that moment. And, you know, there's a few spaces on our wall of fame when you walk into our training. So I'm hoping during my time here or before I leave, I get a photo up there.
You get a statue. there'll be a statue. You'll get Armitage's statue and you'll be right next to it in the car park. 100%.
There's a little ball boy just standing out of here. There's a little fan over here.
And like the manner of it as well, like the way you guys went in the semis and you beat Van last minute coming back from like 15, 20 points down, utterly ridiculous. Then beating your local rivals, like the oldest, most horrible rivals, Bayon, my old team, to go up. Like Steph's already taken us through it a little bit, but talk us through the party afterwards, because it must have been insane. You're off to Ibiza, Jean-Baptiste Aldige took you all there, like an amazing time. Like it must have been incredible as a team.
Mate, like I felt like we had won the bloody top 14, bro. Honestly, like
the World Cup.
The literally, it just felt like we had won the World Cup. And oh man, I was just so ecstatic that like what we had done, and like you said, taking it back to Vans, like, and how that kind of panned out, it was honestly, you couldn't even script that as well. Like we knew that Vans was going to be one of our dark horse teams that will tip us over. But honestly, before Gavin Starks had scored the try, we were on the halfway line and I was just like, bro, like we're literally getting smashed behind our line here. I was like, I remember getting smoked by from Nick Benetton, like down the sideline, and boom, and then the ball had whipped right back to left again. And then I got up and I was actually depleted, and I got up and I was like, bro, we've lost this game. And the only thing that I was thinking of my mind was like the beers that we're gonna have afterwards. And then obviously the play had happened, when Luca Perez Blanco went, offloaded into Bobby off to Staki, bro, and I was just like, well, off to the finals. Obviously, the finals coming up against Bayern, and then the party was that was unbelievable. Like we really just got told probably the day after on a Sunday when we had our lunch that there was going to be a trip planned for us when we got to Ibiza, and then we weren't too sure how that trip was going to be. So like before we left to go to the airport, I was saying to my wife, I was like, going, darling, I'm not sure how
it's
this.
Quiet.
Not sure how this. Darling, I tell you what, it's gonna be quiet. And I literally said to her, okay, I'm not too sure how this trip's gonna pan out. Should I get some money out? Like, and she was like, yeah, get some money out just in case. So, anyways, so we get to Ibiza, man. The plane over was it was a giggle. I'm not sure if I should say this. Nah, I'll say it anyway. It's for laughing. So we're on the plane, and like, obviously we're still buzzing from Saturday. We're like literally just, it was only us on the plane. So it's a chartered flight over and we're all like charging. And then Starkey goes in to behind the curtains, talks to the ladies and stuff to get us some more beers. And we're just like, sweet. So we're like just charging on, like playing our music. And then Starkey jumps up on the intercom or whatever it's called. And he's just like going, he's going to be some beers, reloaded down for the boys. If you guys can just take your place, like, I pumped the music up. I'm going to be walking down, right? And then the curtain whipped open and there's Starkey naked with the trolley walking down the aisle, like giving us our beers. Oh, bro, it was a giggle. And then we got to Ibiza, and then still all of us weren't sure how it was going to go. And then no word of a lie, but fuck, man, I've never been on a trip like that ever in my life. Everything was paid for. Like literally from food, like we literally ate like kings, or like we drank and like ate like royalty. Like the places that we were going to was a joke. But yeah, it was actually one of the craziest trips I've been on. Just going on to the yachts, like we went on these yachts, like three yachts for like the whole day. And from what I heard, for that whole day, going on the yachts, going out for lunch, probably spent like, From what I heard anyway, it was like between like 150 to like 170K for that day only. And I was like, man, if there's that much money flying around, can we get a bump up in our contracts right here?
Yeah, screw the yachts.
Yeah, screw the yachts, man. Just chuck it onto the boys' salaries though. So nah, honestly, I could you not. Like if you talk to the boys, like everything was paid for from Monday to Friday. Like literally we go out midday, come back in the evening, and then like get dressed and then back out for dinner. But everything was like literally on a gold platter for us, and we enjoyed it though. And I guess it was more of a way for our owners and just for our club to kind of say thank you. Like it's been 7-8 years and it's been a massive achievement for us to get here. So that they've been dangling the carrot again, saying, you know, if we stay up in top 14, we can do it again. And we're like, oh, guys, come on. Like, it's a no-brainer. So
there's a few
incentives there.
No, I just want to take a paddle board. If I could just get a bonus, it'd be great. I don't need the yacht.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, your really good hooker is injured. I might lace them up again, because I'm telling you, on Instagram, I was where you was at. I was on that boat. I had my NBA shirt, except I was pale white, man. You know, in my own house. But I was on that. I loved it.
The cool thing for you, like you mentioned the owners and you mentioned so Jean-Baptiste Aldiger, your president, and the Gav family. And the cool thing is for me, like they could have just written a check and sent you on your way, but they were there with you. They joined the party you. They led from the front. So what's it like having owners and have a president, like a young president as well? He's only 37, 38, I think. Yeah. What's it like having these guys as part of the sort of team, like the wider team? They're owners, but they're part of it. And they want to enjoy the trimmings. They want to take you out and have a good time and show how good it can be when you perform, which is great.
Yeah, that, I think you nailed it on the head, like for them to be involved. You know, even on that trip, like Louis Gav came over for his two sons were there as well. So they're kind of like rubbing shoulders.
They're young fellas, eh?
Young fellas. So George is 14 and Henry is 16. So the two of them were on the trip of us. Gav didn't join us until like halfway through the trip. But man, like Gav is like a real personable sort of person, like real gentle, like his whole demeanor and like the way he talks, like he's just real gentle in how he talks. So like he was involved with it. His two boys were there. But I'll tell you this one thing with his two boys. So our first night, when we were in Ibiza, we go to this place called Blue Marlin, and this place is kind of like I'll tell you, I've been there before with the Quinns boys, but when I went there with the Barrett's boys, like I was like, man, have you seen the prices of like the drinks and like the food? The burger there was like 55 euros. And so I was just, so when I heard like we were going to this place, I was like, this place, we're going to be broke after this trip. And then, so we get there, and then obviously they said like everything's paid for, and I was just like, oh bro, no way. So like everyone's like buying bottles, like literally just like, mate, it was actually a joke. And then George, the youngest one, he had this card, and I'm not even going to say the amount, like how much the night was, but there was a minimum that we had to spend. I'm not even going to say the amount as well, because it was a joke to it. And so the bill came, and then George had the card, and sitting next to Steph. So the lady came out with the monitor, with the card machine. Mate, for how much that was on the card machine, the kid tapped it. Bro, have you heard of that before?
Contact. My limit, I think it's just gone up to 50 euros. I'm not sure it's the same cards.
Oh, man. But honestly, like the kid had the credit card, and usually you bloody talk, like, I don't know, like write a check or something for it, or like put the digits in, but the little kid tapped it though. And man, like that's when we knew. I was just like, there's a different world to like wealth and everything. But anyway, that's Gav, like real personable, and obviously JB as well, you know, likes to be a part of it and be amongst all of the boys. And you can see it, like he just hangs around with the lads. So they're just real personable with us. Good fun though.
And he's an interesting character as well, isn't he? Jean-Baptiste Aldiger. I mean, you sort of referenced it earlier on with politics off the field, but there's been lots of chat in the media about a merger between Biarritz and Bayonne, about him moving the club. So, I mean, how much of that does he speak to you about as players, and how much do you know about? Because he threatened to move the club to somewhere near the Belgian border, didn't he, and all sorts. So, yeah. You are playing your home games, apparently, or you've asked to, in the Challenge Cup in Lille this season.
That's what I heard. So I heard we have our games up there. We went up there for our pre-season, had our game against Bordeaux. So obviously him and the mayor, I'm not too sure how much I can talk about it though, but him and the mayor, they obviously have their love-hate relationship. Not too sure how much love, I'm not too sure how much hate, but it's obviously all out in the media. For what we know is that there was that talks they were going to be moving up to Lille. I remember on the train up, you know, JB wanted us to put like stories up on our Instagrams, on our social medias, to be like, you know, that it looks like we're moving to Lille. like, I think it's just more of like that tip for tat sort of strategy.
Mind games
though. Yeah, it's one of those ones though. So, but then also heard that we could be potentially going down to San Sebastian as well. look, he's a complex man. He's a complex man, but he knows. Good thing about him is like he knows business. So like he knows how to like I'm not sure having to like go out into the media and how to promote it in that sort of sense is the kind of the right way. But look, at the end of the day, like he has his way of dealing with business, and for us as players, we just kind of sit back and just kind of see it all pan out. But we kind of hear things along the way with him, and you know, we heard that we could be going down to San Sebastian, and you know that'll probably be more of a likely scenario. Like we'll probably like that more than Lille, because we went up to Lille and
it's colder, mate. You're nearly in Scotland in Lille, actually.
Yeah. And the only good thing about Lille is that they have five guys. So that's the only bonus that we'll take if we were to go up there. We've got to have some sort of shares and five guys if we go up there. So but I'm not too sure what's going on currently at the moment. But yeah, it's all up in the air. And look, politics, politics, mate.
You said, like he's trying to get more money out of the mayor. He needs to get new facilities and upgrade everything for you guys. Like you're doing well. You deserve to have more money behind you, so that threat has to be there. Yeah. Like a few games in San Sebastian, it'd be awesome as well. Like the football stadium down there is amazing. Like Beerets have played a few games there in the past at Real Sociedad Stadium, and it's stunning. Like great surface, really nice tapas, some good sangria across the border as well. It could be worse. But JB, he's done some great stuff. Like the front of jersey sponsor he's brought in. You've got Grindr, which very unconventional, very not Basque. Yeah. But it's the biggest front of jersey sponsor, I think, in the top 14 or the second biggest one. Like, it's incredible some of the stuff that he has done and the money he's bringing in. Haranordiki, Yashvili, these guys that are coming back in and, you know, help propping up the association of the clubs. So, like, it's going the right direction.
Yeah.
And we touched on it a bit with the sort of culture and the lifestyle. You're obviously fitting in well in France, but how different is life at Biarritz compared to Quinn's in London and in the Premiership? And looking back on your time at Quinn's a little bit as well, are you surprised by how quickly they managed to turn it around and become Premiership champions?
Look, London was nice, but the only thing about it was just too big. I didn't stay in London. I stayed just outside, hour and a half southwest in a place called Guildford. And it was nice for me and my little family. But I think for me and my family, like to be closer to, you know, the beach, we live in Anglet, and, you know, like, to my wife to be able to like walk down the road to go to the beach, to the cafes. Like it's those small things that kind of make life a lot easier for her. So when I come home, you know, I don't feel like, you know, like I don't want to have that unnecessary stress of just being like, you know, if she's not happy, it won't make me happy. So I'm glad that she's kind of happy to be here in Biarritz. And to your other question with the Quinn's boys, man, they're doing some damage. They are carving up. Like to be putting 50 points on Bristol last week or week before, like that's crazy. Like that's unheard of. And to be down 24-7, like it just goes to show, like the Quins had always had it. Like they always had that DNA of just being able to play that flamboyant rugby, and just throwing the ball around, score the tries from anywhere. And I think obviously what happened with Guzzy, him going, I think the boys that were there, they kind of took the ownership, and then they kind of took what they wanted to do the whole time that, I guess, theoretically, like when under Guzzy, like Guzzy was a good coach, man, like, don't get me wrong. Like, but I think, you know, the mentality that some of the boys had and the style of rugby that they wanted to play, wires were kind of crossed with Guzzy. So the way the boys are playing, mate, like hats off to them, because they're playing some unbelievable footy. And, you know, my time was good there, man. I enjoyed it. Like, look, it's a chapter in my career that I kind of use as a stepping stone to kind of where I am right now. And I took all the experiences, good and bad. You know, I was injured quite a bit there. And then obviously trying to fit back into playing again, like just trying to get that love back again. And now that I'm here in Biarritz, man, like, you know, you can't wipe that smile off my face, because, like, you know, I get to wake up, mate, like, when it was in January this year, I remember it was like sunny outside. And then I go on Instagram, I look on the stories back at the boys at Quinn's. Bro, it's bloody snowing there. And I was just like, wait. So, you know, like, it's like one of those ones where you kind of like, you know, it's a blessing for me to be here, man. Like I never thought I'll be saying that I'm living in the southwest of France, man. Like, that's crazy for a boy from South Auckland. Like, for me to say that, like I'm blessed though. So I'm grateful to be here, man, and enjoying the ride.
Awesome. One of your ex teammates has actually been in contact during the week, Tim Visser. And you mentioned Guildford. And so Viss asked me to ask you, he's like, ask him this question directly. Don't change the question. He said, can you please ask Franny about crip walking over his Mercedes GLE for a video shoot in Guildford?
Oh, mate. Mate, I'm gonna, hey, Viss, you're playing up on that one, bro. So I was just doing, it was just the challenge that was going on. I just thought I'd be a little bit flamboyant and do something different. And I didn't do the crip walk on top of my car, but I did do a dance, and I got my little sister got my wife to drive the car slowly, and I had my sister recording it from the footpath. And I told my wife, I said, just go really slow, because I was doing like my dance moves. But someone on Instagram page, man, holy shit, that's embarrassing, man. But yeah, I did a dance on top of it, and it got me in trouble at the same time as well, because just not long after that, I had a surgery on my groin. And days before that, there's me like doing a dance and everything on top of the car.
Cheers, Viss.
Nah, that's all good. Hey, that's all good. I can laugh about it now. This is in the past, bro. So, at the time, yeah, it wasn't that funny though. But for me, it was a bit of a giggle. I can look back at it and just kind of laugh about it though. So,
we mentioned Quinns. Obviously, before that, you were at Munster. You played in Super Rugby as well. So, we talk about it most weeks about how the top 14, with all its stars, may be the best league in the world. How do you feel about it? You're better placed than most to compare all of those leagues.
I haven't played in New Zealand in 7 years. Obviously, the only one that I could probably compare it to is the Premiership. But seeing the Premiership now, it's gone a lot stronger. But, mate, yeah, I'll vouch for that as well, mate. Top 14 is it's a different beast. Holy heck. Like, it's you know you got these 10 blocks of, like, games, and you know every single one is not going to be easy. So you're going to have to be on your game every single week. And, mate, it's a tough competition, man. And but to be honest, man, I thoroughly enjoy it, because in order for you to, you know, kind of be exposed to world rugby, you have to be playing in these top leagues. And I remember saying it to, like, a few of the boys last season in Pro 2. I was like, boys, like, the aim is obviously to go up to top 14. Once you get there, like, Pretty too early exposed in France. Top 14, you're exposed to the world. Like, my family get to watch the games down in New Zealand, and, you know, given some of the results, like, you know, sometimes after games, then I'm on the phone to my dad, and, man, I'm getting like an hour lecture about, like, you know, what's been going on, and you know what I mean? But, you know, that sort of stuff, like, you know, I like it though, because I'm still blessed and I'm grateful that my dad gets to watch the game. It's a hell of a push, to be honest, though, given what's happening with our camp and with injuries. But look, no excuses, man. And we're just going to have to just control what we can, which is coming in with the right attitude first. And hopefully we can swing some results back to how we did against, you know, the Bordeaux and Racing. So
it might be a grind for the next few months to come, but I've got a feeling that carrot of another trip to Ibiza might just do the trick, and we might see you staying up at the end.
Well, I'm pretty sure from what I heard is, like, stay up in top 14, we go back to do our FIFA thing, or we go get into the top 6, then it's to Vegas. So, I don't know. How big is that carrot, man? Like,
I don't know. Are friends and family invited this time, or is it just
man, from what I heard, it is, bro. So,
awesome.
Get it in writing now, and we'll see you towards the top of the table near the end of the season. And great to hear you enjoying life so much in the south of France. So great to have you on. Cheers, Francis.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you, guys, man.
Catch you soon for a beer.
Sounds good. Or two.
Cheers, mate.
Great to have Francis Saley on. And if you're wondering where Mr. Kays has gone, your guess is as good as ours. Power cut, apparently. So he texted, Johnny, what's going on?
Coming through in WhatsApp, apparently. Either he's forgotten to put money in his electricity meter, which I find hard to believe, or there's a power shortage or outage in Tunbridge Wells. So, Andrea Kayser, you need to pay the electricity bill for Benji next month. Clearly, something hasn't been going right with the domestic chores.
Times are tough as a student.
Yeah. He was too busy in Freshers Week drinking pints of diesel. But to be honest, the new star of the show is Francis Sayili. What a bloke. Absolutely loving his rugby. Lovely, lovely man. And couldn't be happy, obviously, enjoying his time, loving being in the Pays Basque, playing some fantastic rugby as well. And what a star, an absolute rock star. And yeah, like he touched on, it is hard. Like that gap between Portidou and top 14 is brutal. It all comes down to recruitment. You have 3 weeks to get yourself in order. They brought in some quality, Elliot Dixon, Curran Drani. But you look across their squad, the sort of depth that they don't have versus a Racing, versus a Toulouse, they have, you know, three international tight heads, and Biarritz just do not have that depth. So they need to make sure their first string stay fit. They look after themselves. They rotate properly. Because when they're on the field, like you said, they're dangerous. They play some superb rugby. So look, fantastic guy. His teammates as well. They're a good group, good fun. And so good luck to them. It's going to be hard, hard for them, hard for Perpignan as well, coming up so last minute. But you've seen the times that they've had when it's good. And I wish them some more.
And elsewhere in the top 14, 5 away wins out of the 7 games this weekend. So, I mean, it's more competitive than ever, but has there been a bit of a change there?
I think, to be honest, that is completely not what you see in the top 14. I'm used to having played in top 14 for 8-9 years. It was home win, home win, home. Like if you were a betting man, it was the easiest accumulator you could ever find because every time you played, the home team won. It was just the way it was. What's happened with COVID, no crowds. I think it's given French fans, French players, the flavor for going away from home, actually pitching up, setting up the coaches, choosing a first string side or putting something out that's competitive and giving it a go. And what we've seen now is like 5 away wins at the weekend in the top 14. That is unheard of. And it just means the product, the top 14 in general, what we can see on TV, what you can pick up in Premier Sports, it's kicked on to another level, which we haven't had before. It's competitive. It's fun to watch. And like Franny touched on in the Premiership, some of the tries that are being scored, some of the quality of the rugby has gone up another notch. So look, it's exciting. It's fun to watch. And it hasn't been the case over the past decade. And I kind of wish it was the case when I was playing because it just looks fun to be part of.
And speaking of home support, we've spoken with Benji before about the crowd at Brive and some of the negative experiences he's had there in the past. And their president, Simon Gillan, has issued a public apology for the behaviour of sections of the crowd when Jules Plisson was lining up kicks at goal in La Rochelle's win there at the weekend. Bit of history there, but what do you make of it?
Right, and Benji got absolutely panned on Twitter as well the last time he spoke about Brive. The abuse he got. So we have to be careful. Look, Jules Plisson, La Rochelle generally, I think, have a little kicking problem in that the pressure that they put on teams, the pressure they put teams under, isn't quite being converted because they're not converting their kicks at goal quite simply. Their penalties and conversions aren't going over. You look back to the finals that they lost last season, and the kicks that were missed, could that have been a point of difference this year again with Jules Plisson? But the story with Jules Plisson goes back 2 or 3 seasons with the Brive support. It's not just them heckling a kicker or taking the mickey out of a kicker. It's because it's Jules Plisson. So Jules Plisson 2016 effectively lost the game for Stade Francais at Brive because he lost, I think he missed 12 points straight in front of the sticks. He had the kick to win the game for Stade Francais again in 2017, pretty much in front of the sticks and missed it. And so he's got a history with the Brive fans where they just heckle and jeer because he's essentially lost 2 games for his previous sides and it kind of nearly happened again. So like, I think he came on in the 7th minute, missed 3 kicks, got pulled off on the 55th minute to, you know, whistles, cheers, typical raucous French crowds, which is what you get in the top 14. And look, it didn't sit well with certain members of the public, but that is one of the bonuses in top 14 is the home support is so important. The noise they generate, they intimidate, and that's what they do. So look, not an easy weekend for Jules Plisson. You can see both presidents coming out, Simon Gillan as well, coming out to excuse the behavior of certain fans. But look, he's a good player. He's a quality player, and he'll come back. Just, I don't think, anytime soon in Brive.
And Cheslin Colby has arrived in France. He's been introduced to the crowd at Toulon, and they need him. They went down at home to Racing, and they've confirmed what we spoke about last week. Freddy Michalak is arriving on the coaching staff towards the end of the year, but they're in trouble, aren't they? It doesn't get any easier for them. They are away to La Rochelle this week.
Well, it's when you say they're in trouble, it's one bloke. So it's Patrice Collazo, who a wonderful job at La Rochelle, came over and took the head job in Toulon. I mean, last year was average. I think they finished 8th. They missed out on that. The last day they lost to the Cast, they missed the playoffs, but he hasn't had a fair crack of the whip this season. Like, essentially, his pre-season for his team was cancelled. So everybody was away at the Rugby Championship. There was a Sevens tournament. He couldn't get a pre-season game organised because he didn't have a team. He didn't have players to coach or train with. So between that, the lack of preparation, the fact that Colby, Etzebeth aren't there, you've got Parise, you've got Issa who's injured, you've got Baptiste Saran, the scrum half, who's injured. He hasn't had any centres to pick from. But the way French rugby is, the way the media works, the way the pressure gets thrown at these blokes, the president told him last week he had 2 weeks to basically perform. This week was better, even though they lost. The manner in which they played, the desire they showed on the pitch was better, more encouraging. But is that going to be enough after a loss at home? I don't think so. So look, Freddie Michelak coming in essentially to take up the same role, the skills role that he's doing over in the Roosters down in Australia. He's not going to be a head coach. So who's going to come in and take his job? Because the writing is now on the wall. He hasn't been given time. He's been given verbal warnings by his own president in the press. It doesn't look good for him. Yannick Brew being mooted. He's a buy-on. He signed a one-year extension to see if he could get them back up. And apparently, irrespective now, he might be leaving. And one destination could be Toulon. And that's just the nature of the pressure of top 14 rugby, is that look, after 6-7 fixtures, if it isn't going your way, if you're not around the table where Toulon clearly now are not, they're now 11th or 12th, I think. It's desperate times and desperate measures, unfortunately.
We will watch with interest what happens behind the scenes at Toulon in the weeks to come. Thanks, Johnny. We'll text Benji. Thanks. Yeah. Time to put 50p in the meter. A big thanks to all of you guys for listening as well. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can as well. Check us out on Rugby Pass as well as on YouTube. Enjoy the top 14 on Premier Sports this weekend. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.